I'm Steve Martin. Welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. Our guest today is Chris Jones of Chris Jones and the Night Drivers. Chris has been a guest several times on Unreal Bluegrass and should be every time he wants to be. As a matter of fact, I would open that up to Chris. We connected. He was way up yonder in Canada, and we talked about the brand new album with Chris Jones and the Night Drivers. The name of the album is Make Each Second Last. 12 songs. One of those is an instrumental, so technically not a song. I guess you could hum to it. Great album. Chris Jones is such a great songwriter and such a great singer. I often forget. I don't forget. I just don't stress it enough. His guitar playing. In the opening of the show, you heard Groundhog's Retreat, which is the instrumental off of the album. And Chris is a great guitar player. I mean, he's got some serious chops on guitar. So we talk about that a little bit. Mostly we talk about the album, how it came to be over these COVID times and the long connections, and with the new band fully in place for 2 years, first recorded session they've done together with, of course, Chris. Mark Stoffel has been there on mandolin doing a phenomenal, phenomenal job. Mark's been a guest on Unreal Bluegrass. And the banjo player, Grace Fantoff, and Marshall Wilbert on bass. So this is their first foray into the studio, even though they've been playing for 2 years. Just with COVID, you couldn't get it done. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. We'll begin our nice chat with Chris Jones. Chris Jones and the Night Drivers. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard We Needed This Ride from a brand new album from Chris Jones and the Night Drivers. The name of the album is A Sentiment That I Believe Is Make Each Second Count. And Chris Jones is my guest, a repeat offender with Unreal Bluegrass. Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Steve. It's great to talk to you. And yeah, repeat offender. I think the last time that I talked to you, I was in a Seattle hotel room or something. You reached me at home.
So. See, I like to connect with people when they're way out in far places, and then if I have to do a hometown call, I can do that too. I'm welcome. In most cities that have phones. So I enjoy our conversations. I always look forward to speaking with you. Chris, it's a great album. 11 cuts on it. And I know I've heard several of these songs before. The song that we just heard, I think, is it's emblematic, I think, of what you're saying about a lot of things. It's a very special, I think it's a very personalized song for kind of a relationship song. But the song, I think, speaks to a lot of things, is that this album is kind of a ride that a lot of us needed in a time when music was, that we need music more than ever. We go through the COVID period, and we need more music, and I feel it. I hear the lyrics, but I also feel it as something that that we just need as a listening audience, and maybe you need to perform it.
We need it, too, and you know, that's the way I feel about this album. We needed this this album, and it was difficult to record it, I'll say that, because of the circumstances. Well, I live now in Western Canada, and the border was not open. I have an advantage because I'm a U.S. citizen and I hold a Canadian resident card, so that enabled me to go back and forth when others couldn't. But it was still an ordeal to make it happen, and so we came from the four corners of North America to where our record label is located in near Asheville, North Carolina, and recorded. But we did in three different sessions, all during this. Well, I shouldn't say all during the COVID. The initial session we did was prior to COVID happening, and the song was written before that, and so it ended up being, you know, it ended up seeming so appropriate to the situation, but the song actually predated that.
Well, it does. And I forgot. Yeah, I forgot about the border being closed. So, yeah, fortunately, you can go back and forth. But, yeah, it kind of makes it more difficult for I knew that. I just hadn't thought about it at all as I'm going through the album about those particular problems that it would create with the limitations on travel. So another feature that I was not expecting.
Yeah, it created some interesting challenges. But, you know, I think, you know, we were so grateful to be able to get in there, play music together. One thing that was different is that I was used to recording at a time that we had been playing a bunch and were warmed up, and we weren't. And I'd never done that, and so to compensate for that, I feel the way that we were more prepared musically, because we just made sure that we were. We did a lot of back and forth of emailing, you know, music files and getting really familiar with the material that way and the arrangements, and I just made sure everything was, that we had our ducks in a row and then had plenty of rehearsal time when we got together. And so I, you know, not too late to learn a few things. I felt really good about how prepared we were as a way of compensating for the fact that we weren't out there playing every day.
I didn't mention the record is on Mountain Home, which you mentioned a little bit about the recording studio. But I think that, and Chris helped me with this because I don't have anything to relate to it, I think that there are a lot of lessons that are going to come out of this restrictive area of the COVID. New recording techniques, more familiarity with how that happens. I know that recorded parts of albums had been in the past and will still be sent, you know, a file to be dropped into a recording, but is it getting more sophisticated recognizing some of those, like your particular situation where you're in Canada and the rest of the band is not?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more of that happening in general, even without COVID situation, but I think that it made that technology that much more important. We didn't use a whole lot of it ourselves in this situation, although we did. There was a situation in which Marshall couldn't get in to play bass, and we went to his house and recorded the bass parts. But in general, everything we did, we're all in the studio together. And it was, as you know, a challenge to do it, but we did. But I think a lot of people are recording and using all files sent in, and there are just so many more options these days. So it's a really good development, I think.
Well, there are parts of it that are going to be helpful in the future. Like you can do rehearsals on Zoom if you have to. I mean, actually, they work out pretty well now, so you can actually do. You mentioned not being on the road to get, you know, to be on the road and then go in and record it and be, but you can do so many rehearsals that that actually the quality's improved, I think, as the demand has come for to make those things better, and musicians and artists and recording labels have gotten better at making those things work and being seamless.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Stoffel, you know, his album Coffee and Cake, he really took advantage of people playing remotely and learning things remotely on his mandolin. Was it 18 mandolin
mood? Yeah.
And he had people from all over the world playing on this, and also sending in their video parts for the video.
I love that album. Mark was on Unreal Bluegrass, and we went through all that. And it gives me a good opportunity now and a reminder. Now let's talk about the Night Drivers as they exist on this album and the current makeup.
Yeah, this was the first album that featured our new lineup. I'm still calling it new, even though we've been together in this form for 2 years,
right?
Because we spent all that time not playing, it still feels very new. I was lucky to have very few personnel changes for a long time, over 10 years, with Ned Lubarecki and John Weisberger and Mark Stoffel and I were playing together. But I had a situation where two people were leaving at once, Gina Furtado and John Weisberger, and Grace Bantoff, who I had heard play with Bill and the Bells. She was a founding member of that band, and she was a founding member of Della May, and familiar with what she did, and Marshall Wilburn and I go way back to the 1980s. So they started in the fall of 2019, and so we were already starting to work up new material, and I have really enjoyed this lineup of the band. It has been. I think one of my philosophies as a band leader is I don't try to duplicate what was happening before. Let people to obviously be up on the material, but I want them to bring their own flavor to it. And so it's always It's always different, and I'm just really proud of what this particular lineup is doing.
Well, you're right, and it's a great. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Chris Jones about the new album with the Night Drivers, Make Each Second Count. We're kind of going through a little bit of I think that's part of your philosophy then, and you're right. For so long, I knew I could tell you, you could wake me up at 3 in the morning, I could tell you played with the Night Drivers because it was so solid. And so changes happen, and good things happen in changes, and this current lineup on this album is just fits together really well. I knew of Grace from Music She Plays. She also does a lot of graphic design, does she not? Am I wrong on that?
Yes, in fact, she just won an IBMA award for that.
That's what I thought.
A year, and she designed the cover of the new album.
I like to give her credit. So and of course, Marshall's played with everybody, and like you said, you knew him long, long time ago. Not that we're going to talk about your age or anything, but you go back a long time with Marshall, who's just been one of the most solid, not only bass players, but also backup singers and lead singers on occasion.
Yeah, and to date both of us, I first met Marshall in the early 80s. I was playing with Special Consensus. We used to play in Austin, Texas fairly often, and that's where we got to know Marshall. He was playing in a band called the Alfalfa Brothers, and he was playing bass, and they were doing original material of his. And he said, "You got to hear this guy's songs." And so a lot of his songs that were recorded later, he was doing back then with the Alfalfa Brothers. So we got to know him. And then a few years later, he had gone pro and joined a full-time bluegrass band out of Pennsylvania called Whetstone Run, and Lynn Morris was part of that band, so he was hired as a bass player. And then I had gotten to know Lynn and Marshall, and an opening happened there, and they brought me on board in the band, and so I got to play with Marshall and Lynn back then, and Lee Olson, who was the band leader. That was in the mid-1980s. Marshall and I go back a long way. In fact, we were roommates there in Pennsylvania during that time period. So this is a reunion for us.
Well, that's a good fit. I do not know of the Alfalfa Brothers. I probably will make a little bit of an effort to find something about them because I've never heard of them. I don't know that I'll find a whole lot from the way you describe
it. I don't know if you'll find recordings or not. It was local Austin, Texas area band, good band. But they're, you know, strictly a local band, just playing for fun, playing well.
Everybody starts out local at some point, Chris. You know that. You have a hand in writing every one of these songs. You write with Tom Utes. You have in the past, and writing with Tom Utes is always a good thing. Bed of Snow, and we're going to talk a little bit about Riding the Chief, which is one that you wrote with Tom, according to my notes. But I think that anytime, Chris, you're a great songwriter. Anytime you can write with Tom Utes, I think that's a good thing. I do love the music and the thought that Tom puts into the historical background of everything that he writes. It's always got something in his mind that we're going to talk about Riding the Chief here in a little bit. I will bet you that he studied trains. I mean, I'm sure you did too, but it's just Tom and you writing songs together to me is just a great combination.
Well, he helped me get out of a pandemic writer's block, I have to say. We wrote via FaceTime. I had never done a video conference writing session before. I know a lot of people do them, but I hadn't. And Tom had said repeatedly, let's get together. When are we going to do this? And so we did. And so I really credit him with. I was just, you would think that being home and going nowhere would be a great time to write a bunch of songs, and for me that didn't turn out to be the case initially.
I think it would be harder, but I don't write songs, so I can't really, but I just think it would be more difficult. But it hits different people different ways, but I would say if you can hook up with Tom. By the way, there's one instrumental on the album, it's Groundhog's Retreat, that you wrote with Mark, and it gives me a chance. I think that the times that we've talked, Chris, I've talked about your songwriting, your singing, but I have never really stopped to point out your guitar playing. And make no mistake about it, Chris Jones is a serious guitar player, and that's what you got your first, I think you got your first jobs playing. And I like this instrumental tune, Groundhog's Retreat. She kind of shows off, the guy's still got some chops on the lead there.
Well, thanks a lot. You know, I have always let the lead guitar take a back seat in what we've done, and I still like it to be that way, but I think I did play a little more lead stuff on this album than in ones past, and just seemed to be appropriate for what we were doing.
Yeah, it works out. And I kept thinking, you know, I've never talked to him. I love his singing voice, songs, all that, but I never talked about your playing, which I think everybody recognizes, and I just don't mention it enough, so I just wanted to make sure. Maybe that's it. Maybe I hear it so much more prominent throughout, and certainly on that one instrumental, I keep thinking, yeah, Chris is a classic guitar player.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, sure.
That started out as a guitar tune. I thought, you know, this ought to be a mandolin tune. I contacted Mark, and we'd never collaborated on an instrumental before, so that was fun.
Well, you know anything about Mark's playing, and I know him better than... I know of Grace. I know her playing. I've paid attention to Mark Stoffel's playing for a long, long time, and I just think the guy's a magical mandolin player and a great musician, and a really, really fine person to not talk to Grace. I know Marshall Wilburn never talked to him, but I just I do like what Mark brings to the band, and I can kind of recognize what he's working on in the background all the time. So I hope he stays.
Yeah, Mark and I have been playing together for 15 years. Mark is such an important part of the instrumental character of what we do. And he's, through the years, has really grown as a tenor singer. I think his singing is great. And he, I think is really important to the rhythm of what we do. He has such a great rhythmic sense. So he's really important.
I want to have you sneak up on Riding the Chief, but first I want to talk a little bit about the 10th cut on the album, We Need to Hear From You, and that was written with John Weisberger, mentioned before. I hear that song, and I hear a lot of things, and I don't want to put any, I always do this, I always say I'm not going to try to interpret art, and I wind up doing it, and I apologize for that, but the song to me is just kind of asking for, it's almost literally asking for people who may have had statements to make and maybe didn't want to make statements or make could be an individual person to person type of statement, but it seems to be asking for people who have maybe been holding their tongue to join in, and that's a very difficult thing to convince people to do. I think the song is a great attempt at a very nice, casual request that, you know, if you have these opinions about whatever, join in.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are respected people who have been kind of afraid to speak their minds, and that can be people, you know, in the Congress or the Senate that are intimidated in standing up for what is right, I think. And then people that are expressing their opinions, you know, in a social media environment, it's the people that enjoy fighting that dominate, and people get trampled easily. So naturally they're intimidated. So what happens is you have the fighters, people shouting at each other, but then there are, you know, respected voices and people that are reasonable and have some well thought out things to say are sort of afraid to do it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Homer and Jethro, I was always a big fan.
Yeah.
And their live album, Jethro at one point says to, Homer is playing this kind of brashy rhythm guitar all of a sudden. He was a great rhythm guitar
fantastic
player. At one point, he's just banging away. And he said, why didn't you jump in there? He said to Homer, and Homer says, or Jethro says, I didn't want to get all bruised up. So that may be a little bit of why people don't want to jump in.
It might be, and plus the whole nature of what used to be civil discourse has changed, and I don't know. I think it's everything together. You could write a list, a page long of all the things that contribute to the fact that what used to be, even between neighbors and people maybe that you work with and artists, maybe not artists, maybe people that don't engage in social media, but there just seems to be a whole change in the nature of what I would call discourse between people that disagree.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with you.
Yeah, I know you do. And I don't know how to solve it, except here's a great song that says, hey, just very casually, if you want to speak up, you know, we need you to do it, and we're here with you.
you know, thanks a lot. You know, since the album came out a week or so, since the 15th of October, people have gotten, I've gotten really great response about this song, and which surprised me in a way, not just because it's easygoing, waltz time thing, but the label, when they were having pre-orders and you could stream it, and things, that was the giveaway track in before the release time, so some people had a chance to hear that before some other songs.
Yeah.
But thank you.
Yeah, it's a nice, polite way to say, "Come on, let's talk. Let's talk. Listen, I want you to walk us into Riding the Chief a little bit. That's a song that you and Tom wrote, and then I'm going to play that for the audience. And I come back and talk to you a little bit more, then I'll let you go."
Yeah, Riding the Chief was actually the first song that Tom and I ever wrote together, the two of us. We had some three-way writing sessions on his Civil War projects, but and because Tom, as you know, had said was interested in the history of things, I told him I had this kind of personal tale about riding the Amtrak Southwest Chief when I was a kid, which I rode a lot from Chicago to Albuquerque. I was going out to see my dad, and I was telling him about this and the history of it. It was the former Santa Fe Chief, and so Tom looked up some information and he said, "Oh, I like the personal side. I like to write songs like this." So he got really into the spirit of it, and we really clicked on this one. It was really, and again, he got me out of my pandemic.
Yeah, that's good.
This song.
So that's good. It's a nice, has a nice swing feel to it also. Let's play Riding the Chief, and I'll be right back. There it is, Riding the Chief. It's just got all those nice little cities connecting the line in there, and it's another. That's the fourth cut on the album, as I have it. Speaking of Chris Jones, if you just tuned into Unreal Bluegrass, and which I always say, where have you been? We've been here talking and having a good time talking about Make Each Second Last on Mountain Home, brand new record with Chris and the Night Drivers, and it's a solid, solid album. 11 cuts rather, one instrumental. There are a lot of tunes on here. I like this. Leaving at the Gate, I'm familiar with because I know that came out as a single, and we've played it before over the last, I don't know, several months on the radio. Quiet Click is an interesting song. It's one that you wrote by yourself. They're all interesting, but it's you don't get the slam. Or more often than not, let's say that it wasn't even a slamming event. But the quiet click of the phone is the way conversations or relationships or whatever, in that case, it's more of a relationship.
Yeah, and relationship ending with kind of just quietly walking out the door, which sometimes is worse than the slam.
Yeah. We're going to talk about a little bit about, I have to go to the last song at this point, Chris. I have to go to... They're Lost Too, which I think that's where I pick up Marshall's voice and those great deep sounds that he has. Let's talk a little bit about They're Lost Too.
Yeah, there's a gospel quartet that Grace and I wrote together. It was the first time we've ever co-written a song. And gospel quartet, Marshall did a couple of things on this album that he had never done on previous recordings, which is sing tenor and sing bass. He sings tenor on another song on Silver City, and he sang bass on this one. But I happen to know from past band experience that Marshall's a good bass singer. So, this is the song is really it's kind of three different parables from the New Testament rolled into one song. But it's kind of a song about unity and including everybody, and the importance of that 100th sheep, and the flock of 99 need that one sheep just as much as that one sheep needs that flock of 99. And so that, you know, the idea is that those sheep are lost too until that last one.
So the last one's found. Yeah. So are you touring now? Have you been out playing?
Yes. No, we started touring later than some other bands just because of our geographical disadvantages. And
right.
Mentioning the U.S.-Canada border, and you know, we're very scattered, you know, from Western Canada to Virginia to Southern Illinois and Michigan. And, We started Labor Day weekend was our first time back out playing. We played the Thomas Point Beach Bluegrass Festival in Maine, and it felt really good to be back out there and playing in front of people that were not on a computer screen. And then we were at the IBMA World of Bluegrass and some other shows along the way, Walnut Valley Festival in Winfield, Kansas, which we play fairly often. So it's been great to be back out. Like I say, the band, this lineup of the Night Drivers has been together for 2 years, but it really feels new. So it's new and exciting for us.
I can't imagine Chris and the rest of, certainly the rest of the band and Marshall being maybe as long, equally long in the business of performing. I can't imagine going through that period where not only can you have a writer's block on writing songs, but you don't get to perform. You miss that connection with, you can do all the Zoom things, that's nice, and people like doing that, and people like seeing it, but without that connection, that has to be just an empty, not that other things fill your life, but I can't imagine having been a performer that long without any feedback from a live audience right in front of you.
Yeah, we missed it very much, and I don't think that we're dependent on applause to maintain our steam or anything, but I think just the feedback from people and that connection, and of course bluegrass music is famous for its close connection between performer and audience, so we missed everybody, and I think of course we missed playing together, and I did some solo live streams, and that was great, and all that, but it's no substitute for being out there playing together. I think that's something that we really missed. There are always good sides to things like this, and I think a lot of us, you know, made time for things we had not had time for, and being at home and,
oh, yeah.
and that daughter who was just getting old enough to move away. It was her last year at home, and so I had all sorts of time to spend with her I wouldn't have otherwise. And so there are certainly good aspects of it. But from a professional standpoint, it was incredibly challenging. And I know I talked to the other band members. Everybody would go through different periods, and some also get pretty low about it and then sort of snap out of it and just go through phases. Of course, along the way, we're all thinking, well, this will just be another 3 months, and everything will be fine, and you know, events would postpone and then postpone again, and we just had no idea.
Well, I think that would be
how long it was going to last.
Well, I think that would be as much of the worst part of it, is that it was a moving target until people felt safe going out. And not that you need the applause, Chris, for your self-esteem, but just there's a connection, whether people are listening and it's just silence. But that, I just can't imagine not having that physical connection, you know, even though the audience is in the seats or and you're on stage, there's a connection there, and it's just something that I can't imagine that being part of your life and then not having it. Great opportunities with family and writing and whatever, but man, oh man, I can't imagine people who like you.
No, you're absolutely right. It was very, very difficult. None of us saw it coming, of course, and none of us knew how long it would last, I said to somebody, you know, I think, you know, a friend of mine was really down about it and hadn't performed since, most of us hadn't performed since March of 2020. And I said, well, look at it this way. You know, people are wrongfully imprisoned all the time. And, you know, people go through prison sentences that are a lot longer than this. And, we'll all get through this. We'll all get the other side of it, and we're living in a lot nicer environment with better food. But I think, you know, it helps some people to think of it that way. To think, well, yeah, this could be a lot worse, and this too shall pass. But it just makes it that much more. I think all of us that are out there playing again and getting the feedback that you're talking about personally from an audience and that rapport, I think we're so grateful And I think a lot of people will never take that for granted again. And it's our hope that people in the audience will feel that way, too, about live music.
I think they will. I think there will be a resurgence of interest in that. And that's just my opinion, which is, you know, not worth much. Listen, where do people find this great new record?
Well, they're the usual usual places you can, nowadays, the CD is becoming more rare, but I know that you can still order these things through Amazon or if you have other CD sources. Best thing is always to find the artists and buy it.
Well, I agree with you.
And that makes a huge difference. For most artists, that's the only way we really make any kind of noticeable amount of money. But nowadays, of course, we live in an era of streaming, and I accept that reality and encourage people to do it that way and listen, and that does help us over time to add the album to your library and listen to it that way. I think one of the things that's missing from that is just the information, getting the CD booklet and things like that.
Oh yeah,
which is too bad. And you see Grace's graphic design, but a lot smaller. But you can get it online there, and there are links to streaming it and ways to order it and download it, which you can do as well. You can find all that on our website, which is chrisjonesgrass.com. If you just scroll down, there's a big picture of the album cover, and click on that, it'll pull up on sort of a menu of different ways of getting it.
All right. Listen, I happen to be a sucker for tasteful alliteration, and you chose the song Silver City as the last one I want you to introduce. If it's done right, I think it's a great song. I don't know what city, if you're talking about an actual city, it kind of sounds like a real thing that happened, but get into Silver City a little bit.
It is. It's actually about Aberdeen, Scotland, where a family and I lived for a school year. My wife was studying over there at Aberdeen University. And that was a really special time for us. And Sally, my wife Sally, is a great singer, recording artist in her own right. She sang the harmony part. Actually, Marshall sang tenor. This is the first time he had sung tenor in the studio. And Sally sang the part above him. And a special feature, there's a bridge on the song, just a two-line thing, but her daughter Joanna makes her harmony singing debut. She's guesting on the bridge of it. The words are, words on pages spiral towards the sky, which is a reference to the library at Aberdeen University. It has this fantastic spiral, and all these books, you look up into the sky, and Sally was there studying, so there's a few little in references about Aberdeen, Scotland, but they call there's some old travel posters that call it Silver City by the sea, and Aberdeen is on the North Sea in the east of Scotland, so we spent time there. And I'll say about this, in addition to my family guests, one thing unusual about this one is that Mark Stoffel makes his resonator mandolin debut.
Yeah, tell me about that.
He added some resonator mandolin to his regular mandolin on the repeating instrumental lick that happens at the beginning of the song.
Silver City, City by the Sea. I think four is good. Norman Blake on Slow Trains Through Georgia, I think, was five. Just like the circle says, Southern Serves the South. I thought that's pushing it. But he did it. He did it, and he made it work. And I think four, I love alliteration when it fits in the context. And I just thought it was a neat little song. I'm glad you picked it out to share. So with that introduction, I'm going to let you go and play for the audience Silver City from a brand new album, Make Each Second Last. My guest has been Chris Jones of Chris Jones and the Night Drivers. I appreciate it so much. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you making time to chat with the audience and talk a little bit about the album. I wish you the best.
Always love talking to you, Steve, and to your audience. I appreciate you working me in. Thank you.
I always will. Always. All right. Thanks, Chris. This will be Silver City, and I'll say goodbye to you now.